Good evening. Have you eaten well? Good. I want to share with you a quick joke about Chaim and Becky. Some of you may have heard it before, and if you have, then the way I tell it is funny as well, so don't worry. Chaim and Becky, they both passed away about the same time, somewhere in their late 90s. And they arrive in heaven. And there, the archangel Gabriel welcomes them and shows them down Heavenly Boulevard, where each house successively is larger than the previous one. And the way it works in heaven is whoever died last gets the next house at the end of the street. And each one is bigger, a bigger edifice than the previous one. They finally get to the last house, a palace. And the archangel Gabriel says, "This is yours." And he shows them around 14 bedrooms. I've only got two children. 14 bedrooms inside jacuzzi, outside of Olympic-sized swimming pool, indoors, outdoors, tennis. You cannot believe everything you could ever ask for from this world. And Chaim says, "This is ours?" And the angel says, "Yeah, this is all yours. All of this, ours? It's all yours." And Chaim turns to Becky, his face red with anger. "Becky! You and your foolish cholesterol and diets! We could have had this 15 years ago!" No one's planning to leave this world before their time. Tonight's presentation is on holistic healing through the lens of Maimonides. In the sense that what we're going to look at are legal statements and recommendations for health care, which he actually gives a guarantee of long life. I think it's appropriate, in fact, that instead of sharing the 23 paragraphs sequentially from beginning to end, I'm going to quote for you paragraph number 20. And think while you're listening to the context, which is that Maimonides was the physician to the Sultan in Egypt. In fact, from the age of 31, when he first became a physician, supporting his family, including his brother's family, his brother died in a shipwreck, at the age of 39, he was appointed physician to the Sultan. And at the same time he was Sultan in Egypt, he received an invitation from Richard the Lionheart to become a personal physician. This was the fame and the far-reaching name which Maimonides had as a phenomenal doctor. He was also the leader of the Jewish people in Egypt. And think for a moment, what is at stake if Maimonides makes a mistake in his prescription to the Sultan? Whose life? Whose lives are on the line? And yet listen to the following recommendation that he makes in directive number 20. Kol hamanig atzmai bedrachim elu, anyone who follows these directives, ani arev loy, I guarantee him, that's very strong language. What does he guarantee? Ani arev loy she'enoi ba lidei choli kol yamav, he will not come to illness his entire life. Ad shiyaskin harbe, only after exceedingly old age, liyamos, and pass away. Ve'enu tzarech l'roife, he will not need a doctor. Now, I don't suggest you stop paying your premiums, but you will not need a doctor. Ve'e gufo shalem ba'omed al buryav kol yamav, his body will remain complete and healthy all the days of his life, by following the directives which we're going to listen to tonight. Ela im kein, and now he gives the disclaimer where this guarantee does not apply. Ela im kein haya gufay ra mitchilas briyasay, unless from the earliest age of infancy, from the time he was born, he was ill. Oyim haya ragil b'minhag min haminhagos haroyim mitchilas muladasay, or if he was disciplined in bad habits, whether it's diet, lifestyle, from a very young age of infancy, when the body is forming, then this claim, this guarantee does not apply. or yom tava makas deva, makas besuras lelam, or if a person's struck by a terrible plague, also the guarantee does not apply. But aside from those exceptions, he is promising that a person will enjoy good health his entire life. That's a very powerful statement. Let's look at the term holistic so that we can be on the same page when we understand what we're looking at over here. The dictionary tells us that the term holistic refers to the use of therapies that consider one's total physical and psychological state in the treatment of disease. And I think that's an important preface, introduction, because when we start looking at the directives of health given by Maimonides, we discover that he doesn't talk about disease so much. And this particular quote, which we're going to go through, 23 paragraphs, is taken from his halachic work, his legal code, the first major legal code, which took all the discussions of the Talmud and gave legal decisions on all those arguments and discussions. And in this legal code, in chapter 4 of Hilchot Deot, he has these 23 directives. They are completely focused on health, as opposed to illness. Meaning to say, follow these 23, he's guaranteeing that a person will maintain good health throughout his life. If a person is ill to start with, these are not necessarily the correct directives. These are relating specifically to someone who is already healthy and wants to maintain their health. The other two places which one can quote from, and I will be quoting a few places from those other two works, is one is Hanhagot HaBriyot, which is a work which is acclaimed to be a treatise that Maimonides wrote for the Sultan himself, who had specific ailments, but there are many parts, a number of chapters to this treatise which he wrote, which he said is common to all people, and therefore we'll be able to take applications from there as well. And the third place are actually manuscripts which were originally written in Arabic, which have since been translated in a number of different languages, including English, by Dr. Fred Rosner. And I will be quoting a few quotes from there as well. Just to give you a brief overview of the extent to which Maimonides talks about different subjects. Throughout these three works, he talks about general medicine, anatomy, pathology, the study of disease, physiology, symptomology and diagnosis, etiology of disease, fevers, bloodletting, laxatives, surgery, gynecology, hygiene, exercise, that's very interesting when we get to it, how he defines exercise, bathing, diet, drugs, strokes, hemorrhoids, digestion. The point being that we will be actually quoting several directives from these subjects, and that will enable us to see how Maimonides treated the overall health of a person, not just from the point of view of bodily health, but also attitude. He'll talk about anger and happiness. He'll talk about sports, gymnastics and exercise, not just diet and illness. And this will give us a much deeper appreciation that holistic, which I think should really be spelled W-H-O-L-E, a holistic approach to health means, is it fair to look at a person's specific ailment in isolation to financial stress that the person may be experiencing, or going through a divorce or foreclosure? Is it possible that if we don't look carefully at the full picture of what's going on in the person's life, and perhaps some of their history, we may not fully appreciate and understand how to deal with this person. And so, looking at the way Maimonides looks at health will give us a much broader respect of his holistic approach to maintenance of good health. And with no further ado, let me introduce you to Maimonides. Directive number one. I'm going to translate very clearly, but for those who understand Hebrew, I want you to be able to appreciate the original. Since a healthy body, medarki Hashemhu, is part of serving God, going in God's ways, it's impossible to understand God when a person is ill. How can he focus? Therefore, a person needs to distance himself from anything which is harmful to the body, and he should accustom himself, discipline himself with those items which strengthen and invigorate his body. So in the very opening words, what do we see? That Maimonides puts health in the context not of being happy because I'm healthy, but being healthy as a spiritual person in one's endeavors as a Jew to serve God. That it's a religious act to take care of one's body. And he starts off with the following recommendation. Le'olam lo ya'achel adam ela kashu raiv. A person should only eat when hungry. Interesting. Interesting. Now, how many snacks a day does that mean? Only eat when hungry. The following statement. V'lo yishteh ela kashu sameh. Only drink when thirsty. V'al yishteh nikavav afilu rega echad. And he should not delay elimination, defecation, urination for a moment. Three statements over here. They sound very simple, but the underlying message is the following. Listen to the body. It was created with such perfection that if you hear a message from your body that says, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I need to relieve myself, it's a message of health to my brain. Later on I'll be quoting a number of references from contemporary medicine that helps us to understand and appreciate more deeply these statements from Maimonides. But there's mounting medical research which shows that there's a powerful correlation between what the mind tells itself and how the cells respond. There's different names for it, pheromones. The concept is that the body has been designed by a creator that when it has a message to us, listen, because it has such integrity that when we ignore it, we're going to pay the price. A person, the moment they need to relieve themselves, must do so. And we're going to see later on the importance of this. Directive number two. Lo yachel adam ad shitit male krisei. A person should not eat to the point that their stomach is full. Interesting. Elayivkais, but rather, he should only eat up to the point, kamoi revia misivasai, only one quarter of his full capacity. Now, what's interesting is the following. I know I can relate to the following scenario. I'm eating a meal, and there's several courses still to come. And this particular course is quite tasty, and I'm going to take another helping. And what is the measure in my mind that says, have I got room to take another helping and still have room for the future courses? And the answer is, am I full? And what does my brain say? No. Am I accurate in that answer? Why not? Because the food hasn't been digested yet. So I really need to wait 20 minutes for my food to be digested more fully, for my stomach to be able to give me a proper message. But if I ask the question now, can I afford another helping? It may be premature to answer that question. So how can a person know, according to Maimonides, that they're only up to three quarters capacity? Three quarters of the tank is full. How is a person supposed to know? So the answer is, fill your plate as much as you would have expected to eat, and then take off 25%. Now, I don't expect you to walk into the dining room with rulers, but the point is, watch out for that quarter, because that's what's going to make the difference between short-term health and long-term health, as we're going to see throughout the rest of the directives, and then corroborated from medical science. A person should not drink during the meal itself. Why is that? What is the problem in the digestion if I'm taking in a lot of liquid while the food is being digested? it dilutes the digestive process, because the enzymatic chemical reactions in the body, both in the saliva in the mouths and the gastric juices in the walls of the stomach, will have less access to the food, being that it's floating in liquid. So says Maimonides, you can drink as much as you want at the end of the meal, but not during the meal. It's not good for the digestion. Here's an interesting one. V'lo yachal adam ad sheyelech koidem achila ad sheyatchil gufay lachoim. It's best to begin the meal after you've worked out a little bit. The exact words are bring the body to a higher temperature through some form of physical exertion. Why is that? Because we know that when the body exerts itself through exercise, the bloodstream and the respiratory system is working at its optimum, and this aids in the efficiency of the digestion. At this particular point, I'm going to quote from the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch, the abridged version of the Code of Jewish Law, because Maimonides doesn't mention it here, it's mentioned elsewhere, and that is the power of chewing. In the Code of Jewish Law, the Kitzer version, the abridged version, in chapter 32, in paragraph number 13, makes the following statement, that a Jew, applies to all people as well, but in the directives of health, a person should only drink their food after chewing and chewing and chewing. In fact, the word for teeth in Hebrew is shenayim, right? From the word sheni. Shen means tooth, but sheni means twice, because what is the action of the tooth? Constantly up and down, doubling over the action of chewing. Why? Because we know that where does the digestion really begin? What is the true genesis of digestion? It's in the mouth. Because the enzymes in the saliva begin to break down the food while it's already in the mouth. So what happens if it arrives in the stomach in liquid form? Much less work to do. So it's effectively, it's increased the efficiency of the digestion. And the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch gives us three, if I can remember them, three qualities to chewing slowly, to the point that you swallow your food in liquid form. One, you actually enjoy the food much longer, because your taste buds are exposed for a longer duration because of the chewing process. Number two, the food is digested more easily. And number three, you reach satiation about one third sooner, which means you feel full 30% earlier than you would have having eaten fast and swallowed food still in solid form. So here we have something very interesting. It's a choice. It's a personal choice. But look at the quality of health that one could look forward to by chewing slowly, so that we only swallow in liquid form. And then we will reach satiation earlier, and we get to enjoy the food more. So where is the fast food syndrome aiding us? Surely we're spending more money, at least one third more, on food because of this. I'll share with you an interesting insight, just parenthetically over here, is that on Passover, we are instructed to eat a kazayas, which is approximately one full square of a matzah, in anywhere between 2 and 9 minutes. Now, when you're chewing away, that's a lot of chewing. But if you look closely at the Mishnah Berurah, which is one of the super commentaries, he explains there that to correctly eat the matzah in the choicest mitzvah way, the best way, one should swallow one or two times the entire matzah. How is that possible? And the answer is, he says, don't swallow the matzah in its present form. One piece at a time and keep chewing. One piece at a time, keep chewing until it's liquid. And once it's in liquid form, make one or two swallows and you'll get the entire one piece of matzah down. This is the concept you see in halacha, in Jewish law, how a person should be practicing the actual act of chewing. Continues Maimonides. Directive number three. Le'olam k'shiyachal adam yashav b'mkoymoy o yita al smol. A person should only eat sitting down or leaning to the left side. Velo yahalech, velo yirkav, he should not be walking, he should not be riding an animal. Velo yegea, velo yazazea gufay, he should not be exerting his body at the time of eating. Velo yitayel, and he shouldn't go for a walk. Ad yitakel hamazon shebemeav, until the food is digested in his stomach. Vekol hametayel, anyone who goes for a walk, ach achilatoy, after his eating. Oy sheyega, or exerts himself, goes for a run or a swim. Harizem maybe alatzmei chalaim raim ukashim, can God forbid bring upon himself serious illnesses. Why is that? What is the most important function in the body? What is the emergency function of the body? Which takes up the most energy? The digestion. Why is that? What is so urgent about the food being digested? It supplies nutrition to the entire body. If it is not digested efficiently and correctly, what will happen to the food in the stomach? It will putrefy. And then it creates toxicity in the blood, which can invite illness. Says Maimonides, if a person puts his body out of integrity by putting in competition with another need for drawing its energy. So for example, after a meal, then goes for a run or for a swim, what are the possible dangers? And what are the common ailments that people complain of when they go for a swim or a run or a jog? Soon after, cramp, stomach problems, stomach aches, stitches. What else do people suffer from? Is it possible, and has it happened many times and won't get to the front pages, that people suffer heart attack because they went running on a full stomach? What is this about? The heart is being taxed unfairly because energy has to go to digestion. And if the body is now going to be torn between the two, the blood has to work at double pace, and now the taxation on the heart is too much. The food is not digested properly and can cause toxicity in the bloodstream. Halacha number four, directive number four, he talks about sleeping habits, how often, how much to sleep. Number five, he tells us which position to sleep in. Should sleep on your left side, especially early evening. He suggests not going to retire at night after a meal. Instead, one should wait about 2 or 3 hours. So one should try and organize that one's meal should take place early in the evening. What is the reason? Again, it's the same concept. The body needs to give its energy to digestion before anything else. So if I take a rest, and I know the feeling, if I take a rest or a shluf on a Friday night or a Shabbos afternoon after the world's fastest sleeping tablet, Choland, if I take a shluf straight after the meal, have you ever noticed waking up groggy and... Has it ever happened? And I know I can put my hand up to this one, that I woke up after 9 hours sleep really tired. How is that possible? Says Rambam, if it takes 6 hours to digest a meaty meal, and I went to sleep straight after the meal, and I slept 9 hours, the body is forced to give energy to the digestion instead of allowing the cells to rest. Allowing the body and the limbs to rest, it's giving energy to the digestion, and if it's a heavy meal, it can take anywhere between 72 minutes to 6 hours to fully digest, and then the body rests. And I wake up 9 hours after going to sleep, but the body only actually had 3 hours rest, and the mind saw on the clock, but I slept for 9 hours. Why am I so groggy? There's something wrong. Number 6. He gives examples of foods that are good to eat before a meal as hors d'oeuvres, especially fruits, which open up the digestive tract. And he suggests this in the morning as well, that before one breaks one's fast, the breakfast in the morning after sleep, one should first have a fruit and then have the breakfast. Number 7, he gives an interesting description of combining foods. But the first point he makes is that when you have different foods on your plate, always choose the lighter food to eat first. So for example, and he gives the example of chicken and meat. Eat the chicken first and then the meat, because the chicken is easier to digest. If you have vegetables and meat, I'm sorry ladies and gentlemen, eat the vegetables first. If you have eggs and chicken, he says, eat whatever is the lighter of the two. I can't remember which one he says is the lighter of the two. But whichever you have in front of you as the lighter food, eat that first. It's easier on the digestion. And what is ever going to be kinder to the digestive process will aid in not only the food being broken down into the bloodstream, so the nutrition which is in the food gets to the cells sooner, but a person over time of days, weeks, months and years of being kind to their stomach will more likely give themselves longevity, long life. He talks about climate, how to adjust one's eating habit according to climate, so that if you're in a hot climate, one should take more liquids than solids and should eat about a third less than during the winter, when the body, in order to maintain its body heat, has to burn off food faster, burn off its energy faster, and therefore requires more food in the winter than in the summer. Number 9. Yesh ma'achalas shehem rayim b'yoseh ad me'oid. There are certain foods which are extremely negative, unhealthy for the body. V'roi la'adam, it's correct that a person should not eat them at all. Now remember, as I give you a list of some of those items, we're talking about an age when there was no refrigeration. And what are the items he lists? Fish, which is heavily salted and is no longer fresh. Any dairy product, which is no longer fresh. And any meat product, which is not fresh. Anything which is not fresh, keep away from. And he mentioned Nadav Reichai, any food which has been cooked but no longer smells fresh to you, don't touch it. In fact, why did our Creator bless us with a nose right above the mouth? That's right. I always wondered about that until I read this. In order that the food should first be detected, is this fresh or not? That's the problem of having a very bad cold and eating. And he mentions that someone who wants to take full control of their diet should try to avoid these specific items at all times. And again, we're talking about wherever food is not fresh. The actual wording there, in paragraph 10, the Adam Shu Hacham, someone who's wise, the Koyvesh et Yitzray, and wants to be in control of himself, the Lo Yimashech Acha Ta'avato, and doesn't want to follow after his desires, the Lo Yachal Min and his Karim, should not eat from the above mentioned items, Klum at all, Eleim Nitzrach Lehem Lerfua Hariz Egibur, unless for medical reasons, then he's considered a powerful person in control of himself. This is very interesting. In paragraph 12, he tells us that you should not give infants honey. This is 800 years ago, and it's only very recently that medical science makes the same claim that infants don't have the digestive strength yet to properly digest honey. Number 13. And here, if you fall asleep for everything else but this, you will have done a great service to one's health. Le'olam, constantly, consistently, yishtadel adam, a person should make an effort, shiyiyu me'av rafin kol yamav, that his bowel movement should be loose his entire life. V'yiyah karov l'shushul ma'at, to such a degree that is close to diarrhea. Should be. I'm not talking about actual diarrhea. We all finished supper, right? Okay, good. But we're talking here about loose stool. The bowel movement should be loose. Why? He's going to point out that if you want an internal measure for your personal health, check your stool, check your bowel movement on a daily basis. If a person has good, easy moving bowel movement, it's the surest and best indication that the body is in its integrity in doing the job of correct elimination of what it digests. The opposite, the converse, is also a measure for noticing that there are problems in either my diet or my lifestyle or in my sleeping rhythm, where a person experiences constipation on a frequent or consistent basis or has very hard stool, this is a strong indication that there are problems in the digestion which can lead to illnesses. And I'll give you the exact quote. V'zeh klal gadol b'refuah. This is a tremendous principle when it comes to healing. Kol zman sha'aray nimna o yotze b'koshi. Whenever a person experiences constipation consistently or frequently, chalayim ra'im b'ayim. Serious illnesses can come. Paragraph 14. V'od klal ache amru. Another directive, another principle was given, b'briyas haguf, concerning the health of the body. And this is number two. He's going to give us three principles of healthy living. And if all you get from tonight is these three principles, I think you will agree that it was worth it. And then you can go to sleep. Kol zman she'adam mit'amel. All the time that a person exerts his body, v'yega harbe v'einu savea me'av, all the time that a person exercises, does not overeat, umeyav rafin, and his bowel movement is loose, ein choyli ba'alav u'koychei metchazek. He will not become ill, and his strength will increase. V'afilu oichel ma'achal ha'tzaraim. Even if he eats unhealthy foods. Now I'll repeat that. He's saying that if a person consistently exercises, here he doesn't define exercise, but in Hanhagas Abrius, which is the work we're going to quote from later, he does define what is exercise. If a person exercises daily, and he's careful that he has a loose bowel movement, and he undereats, he's stating to us that a person will not have illnesses, and his strength will increase. Even if he eats unhealthy food. Now this is a phenomenal statement, and he's going to reinforce it in a few moments. What Maimonides is saying is more important than what we eat, which today's generation has become obsessed by. More important than what we eat is how we eat. And the reason why, he explains, under-eating guarantees that you're not taxing your digestive system. Overeating, and he's going to say it in a few moments, overeating healthy foods is more detrimental than under-eating unhealthy foods. Directive number 15, V'kol mi shu yoshev lebetach ve'enu mit'amel, someone who sits all day and does not exert himself, or mi shu mimash henikavav, or someone who delays elimination, defecating, or mi shu me'av kashin, or experiences constipation, afilu achol ma'achalos toivim, even if he eats healthy food, v'shama atzmoy al pi harufua, and he guards himself according to the dictates of correct, healthy living, kol yamav, his entire life, if he's not following the three items we said, exercise, loose bowel movement, and under-eating, kol yamav yu mechoivim v'koichoi tashash, his entire life, he will experience pain, ailments, and his body will decrease in its strength. And this is eating healthy foods, if one is overeating. And now he makes a statement in much stronger language. V'achila gasa leguf, overeating for the body, kol adam, of any person, k'moy sam hamavet, is like a deathly poison. V'hu ikar lekol hachalayim, it is the root of all illnesses. V'roiv hachalayim shebayim al adam, most, the majority of illnesses that a person experiences, God forbid, einam, do not come, ela, except for one of the two following. Oim ipnei machalim raim, either because of unhealthy foods, oim ipnei shu memale bitnoi, or because he fills his stomach, v'oichal achila gasa, and overeats, afilu memachalim toivim, even if he's overeating healthy foods. This is the statement of King Solomon. I'm going to skip the King Solomon statement. I'll move to Dr. Mark Hexted, Lahavdil, from the Harvard School of Public Health in his report to the Senate on nutrition and fitness. I wish to stress that there's a great deal of evidence, and it continues to accumulate, which strongly implicates, and in some instances proves, that the major causes of death and disability in the United States are related to the diet we eat. I include coronary and artery disease, which accounts for nearly half the deaths in the United States. Several of the most important forms of cancer, hypertension, diabetes, as well as other chronic diseases. I'll quote to you also from the New York Times. Scientists are finding increasingly convincing evidence that longevity can be significantly increased by undernutrition. A diet that contains all the required nutrients, but about a third fewer calories than are needed to maintain normal body weight, reports the New York Times, eating less, as animal studies indicate, can add the human equivalent of 40 years to a mammal's life. The diseases common to aging are also said to be inhibited because the usual decline in immune response does not occur. University of Texas physiologist Dr. Edward J. Massaro says that cutting protein intake by 50% greatly lengthens the lives of laboratory animals. The University of California expert on aging, Dr. Ray Wolford, also reports that animal studies indicate a possible 10 to 20% increase of lifespan by cutting down on food starting as late as middle age. Who are the people, if you could identify a sect amongst the Jews, that are very strict in following the dictates of all the laws of Maimonides? The Taimanim. Is there anyone here who's familiar with the average age of the Taimani Jews? First generation of those coming to this country can attest. It's between 97 and 103. Very interesting. Long-term undernutrition is thus far the only method we know that retards aging and extends the maximum lifespan of warm-blooded animals, said Dr. Wolford. The finding is undoubtedly applicable to humans because it works in every animal species thus far studied. And in a book called Only the Skinny Will Survive, Dr. Clive McKay of Cornell University made a classic dietary experiment in which he doubled the lifespan of rats by halving their food intake. This would be equivalent to 140 years in human terms. Professor Huxley extended the lifespan of worms by a factor of 19 through periodic fasting. In orthodox geriatric studies, it has been found that a slim body due to little eating and excellent elimination is an essential factor for reaching the century mark. On this particular point, I found a quote from a Dr. Stephen Smith, a centurion who lived over 100, and he made the following comment when asked, "What's the secret of your longevity?" He said, "Take care of your stomach the first 50 years, and your stomach will take care of you the next 50. I don't remember where I saw it, but I saw somewhere a cute quote, I don't know who said it, that went, "If you want to eat a lot, eat a little. This way you'll live a long time and you can eat a lot." In directive number 16, Maimonides gives very interestingly the directions of how to bathe, hot water, cold water, how long to relax afterwards. In number 18, he talks about bloodletting. Number 19, he talks about physical intimacy, husband and wife, how often, when, what not. This is holistic approach to health. And then number 20 again, he repeats, I'm repeating now, the guarantee that he offered. And what was the guarantee? And I'll repeat again because it's so powerful. Kol hamanhig atzmei bedrachim elu, anyone who disciplines himself according to these directives, are ani arev, I guarantee, loy to him, she'eino ba lidei choli kol yamav, he will not come to illness his entire life. Until he dies of exceedingly old age and then dies. He will not need a doctor. His body will be in complete tact, ve'omed al briyav, and remain completely healthy kol yamav, his entire life, ela im kein, and then he gives the disclaimer. In number 21, he tells us a very important point. What we've quoted so far from Maimonides are his health directives, and it's very important to distinguish between that and his other statements, which is how to treat illness. Because for the most part, medicine, and medical science, is focused on pathology, the study of illness. What Maimonides here has given in his halachic code, his legal code, as legal obligations upon a Jew, are those directives which maintain good health. So in this statement, number 21, he says the following: V'kol ha-minhagos ha-tovim ha-elu, all these positive disciplines, she'amanu, which we've stated, ein roi lenhoig bahen ela habari, should only be practiced by someone who's already healthy. Aval ha-chayle, but someone who is ill, oy mi she'echan meivarav chayle, or someone who suffers from one of his body parts being not functioning correctly, oy mi she'nag minagra shanim rabbeis, or someone who's abused themselves for many years, yesh le'kol echad mehem, each one according to their ailment, yes, it has drachim achadim, specific directions, van hagos kafi chalyo, according to his specific illness. As he explains, he quotes from Sefer Refuos all the different items which he discusses in the other works, which are not quoted here. And then he ends off with the following statement, vishinui veses tichilas chayli, which means the beginning of an illness is changing the rhythm of the body. For example, a serious change in climate can affect the body in a way that it can become ill. Or a person changes diet very suddenly. All changes should be done gradually so that the body can learn to acclimatize itself. And in the very last directive, he quotes the different items. Again, it's so interesting in the concept of holistic approach to health. He quotes all the items a person should look for when choosing a location to live in. And that includes living in a place where there's a doctor, a craftsman, a bathhouse, a bathroom, running water, either a river or a spring, a synagogue, a place to study, a scribe, a collection fund for the poor, and a based in, a court that has the autonomy to follow through on its legal rulings. So here you have, in this one short chapter, 23 directives, where you see the gamut, the vast array of different subjects that he's touching upon: bathing, sexual relations, going to sleep, diet. All these different items are to be included in the full regimen of one's health. I want to quote for you now from some other statements taken from Hanhagos Abrius, and I'll take some questions. I'll be able to finish in time to take questions. I'm going to take from the book that he wrote called Hanhagos Abrius, which literally translates as Directives for Health. In chapter 1, paragraph 3. If a person cared for himself, I like this one. If a person cared for himself the way he cares for his horse, how do you like that? He would avoid many serious illnesses. Does anyone here know someone who owns a $1 million horse and sits in front of the television 4 hours a day and feeds it Coca-Cola and peanuts? Is our body any less than a... You won't find anyone who gives his horse too much fodder. He measures out only as much as the horse can tolerate. But he himself may eat to excess. He makes sure his animal gets proper exercise to keep it healthy. But when it comes to oneself, he neglects exercise, even though this is a fundamental principle in health and maintenance and the prevention of most illnesses. In chapter 4, paragraph 3, he makes the following statement about the integrity of the body. And again, from the point of view of a creator, a designer, the perfection of the body is so beautiful that now Maimonides tells us, when can we rely on the body to take care of a minor illness without intervention? Even with the utmost care and caution, it is impossible to avoid constant minor fluctuations in our physical functioning. Sometimes the stools become a little soft, sometimes a little dry. One day a person may find a change in his digestion, or feel a mild headache, or a slight pain in some other part of his body, and so on. Don't be in a hurry to take medications for these kind of minor problems. And I'm not making the claim at all that Maimonides is anti-medicine. He has many chapters which discuss the different types of medications for different illnesses. But the question is, in what context? Don't be in a hurry to take medications for these kinds of minor problems. Nature will take care of them without any need for medicines. Follow your normal health regimen. If you try to treat these minor ailments, either you will do the wrong thing and cause harm, or if you do the right thing, while you may succeed in restoring the normal balance, you have also taught your body to become lazy in not fighting minor ailments, and it will no longer function properly without outside interference. Interesting. He then makes the following statement in chapter 2, paragraph 4. If the illness is stronger than the patient, there is no hope of saving him. Wow. And the physician is of no help or benefit. If the patient is stronger than the illness, he has no need for a physician, because nature will cure him. It is only when the strength of the patient and the illness are about equal that medicine is needed to strengthen the patient. Most doctors, and he's speaking about his time, most doctors are greatly mistaken in this and think that they are strengthening the patient's natural vitality when in fact they are weakening it. On this subject, Aristotle, in his Perception and Perceptible, that's the translation given of that particular work, said that the cause of most patient deaths is the treatment they receive from physicians who are ignorant of nature. Emerson, philosopher, deep thinker, said the following about the human body. One day in the life of the human body is enough to steal all the luster from fiction. If you and I could take a journey into the heart, the bloodstream, the liver, the lungs, and witness the harmony with which the body functions, says Emerson, one day in the life of the human body would steal all the luster from fiction. If you took all Shakespeare, all John Conrad, all Jane Austen, all Spielberg, you took everything that was ever written in the world of fiction and you compressed it into 1 hour of an experience, it would not equal the experience and excitement of a journey through the body for 1 hour. The heart pumps how much blood around the body? The average adult has between 8 and 12 pints of blood. How many times a day does the heart pump this blood around the body? Well, depending on how much exercise we get and how much we exert the body, but approximately between 3 and 5,000 trips a day. Over 100,000 heartbeats in a 24-hour period. Look at the power that the body has been given by its designer. Says Maimonides, if a person has a minor ailment, and I'm not, God forbid, giving prescriptions, I'm hopefully quoting accurately from the sources here, let the body do its due course. Where the body is not able to overcome, then turn to medication. Now, this is very interesting. How does this jive with medical findings and history and theories? Interestingly, one of the greatest medical philosophers of the 20th century, John H. Tilden, who's probably best known for formulating the toxemia theory of disease, which holds that disease is nature's effort at eliminating the toxin from the blood. And to overcome toxemia, Dr. Tilden prescribed the let alone plan of care. He prescribes a fast rest in bed and the giving up of enervating habits, which means habits which take energy from the body as opposed to give energy. If these are given up and rational living habits adopted, health will come back to stay. And from his 25 years of experience using prescribed drugs and 33 years of not using prescribed drugs, he came to the conclusion that drugs are unnecessary and in most cases injurious to health. I'm not giving prescriptions over here. I'm just stating that there's plenty within the medical science that you can go that corroborates and supports the statements of Maimonides. I wonder if anyone's familiar with the following statement and its author. Who said the following statement? The microbe is nothing, The terrain is everything. Louis Pasteur. The microbe is nothing, he said. The germ has no power where the terrain, a healthy body, is in place. Another statement he made was, in a state of health, Louis Pasteur said, in a state of health, the body is shut off from the invasion of germs. What he's essentially saying is, where the body is healthy, illness has much less a possibility of invading. Germs have much less possibility of invading. And therefore, the following results were shown in a test. And what is the test? Make a list of all the different ways the body reacts to expelling toxicity in the system. What are the typical ways the body will get rid of fever, sweat, pus, a rash? What else? Diarrhea, vomit. Sorry?
Sneezing.
Coughing. If you take a list of all the symptoms for the most common illnesses, what are you going to find on that list? Vomiting? Coughing? Rashing? Rash? Sweat? What else? What's the obvious?
Common cold.
Fever? The obvious correlation, and this is what is part of the toxemia theory, that the body's way of removing toxicity from the system is by expelling it through these natural ways. Of course, when we see a rash or coughing up phlegm, my initial reaction is, oh my gosh, get that back, I can't take this, this is terrible, so I take medication immediately and put it back into the system. A rash, oh no, put cream on, get it back into the system. I'm only being funny, but the point is, my mind is stating, give the body a chance to show if it's in integrity. If you know that you're exercising, you're under eating, and you have good bowel movement, give the body a chance to take care of the cold, perhaps resting. Let me show you what Maimonides says on the subject of causes for illness. He lists the following. This is taken from manuscripts which were translated from the Arabic. Things which cause an increase and invigoration of the body and strengthen the body: moderate wine consumption, moderate food digestion, moderate physical exercise, and anything that improves a bad cardiac constitution, whether it be liquid or medication, and control of anger and increase of happiness. Interesting. Amongst the list of items which cause disease, he has fasting, insomnia, and anxiety. Let me share with you what was written by Dr. Andrew Weil, who some of you are familiar as the author from the book From Chocolate to Morphine. The mind has tremendous power over the body. Your mind plays a huge role in your health. It determines how every system within the body functions. The endocrine system, that's your emotions, the respiratory system, the lymph system, your immunological response, and the state of your entire physiology all comes from what you do inside your head. When the immune system becomes depressed, it is often the result of stress, physiology, and the focus of mind. Anger and resentment are the physical poisons to the body. The code of Jewish law says that a person, if they are in a state of anger, should not eat, because it affects the digestion. Modern science claims it can even cause ulcers. We know ourselves how stress, anxiety, financial stress, relationship stress can cause a person's body to slow down, become sluggish. There are many theories which claim that when we tell ourselves we're depressed, we actually send a message to ourselves that says, give up hope. There's no point in fighting. And we actually can cause the increase in our immune system, that means that the immunity of our body decreases, so to speak, and we become more susceptible, God forbid, to disease and illness and germs. And that's why Louis Pasteur said, if the terrain is good, then the microbe is nothing. There's nothing to fear in such an environment. To quote again from Dr. Andrew Weil, research associate of ethnopharmacology at Harvard and author of Health and Healing says, external material objects are never causes of disease, merely agents waiting to cause specific symptoms in susceptible hosts. Rather than wearing and worrying on disease agents with the hope of eliminating them, we ought to worry more about strengthening resistance to them and learning to live in balance with them more of the time. That's why we see that when Maimonides chose these 23 directives, instead of talking about illness and how to take care of it, he talks about maintaining health. Because that is the resistance that we can build up to be out of fear, no longer being in fear of illness itself. If we have poor coping skills, continues Dr. Andrew Weil, and also quote from the book Who Gets Sick, written by Blair Justice, if we have poor coping skills, deficient social support and high stress, then the internal balance of our bodies may be easily upset and our resistance lowered. Illness or disease then occurs more from our vulnerability than from our external agents that are the cause of our health problems. The more vulnerable we are, the more risk we run of getting sick. The way we react to the daily hassles of life or to the specific stressful events can mean the difference between coming down with an infection or remaining symptom-free. Maimonides tells us that constant anxiety causes dissolution of body fat and loss of muscle substance. So too blood deteriorates through desire and lust for money, and lust for political power, interesting statement, and recurring thoughts which give a person no peace. These are stress-relating factors which can eat away at the body's resistance. Another statement from Maimonides. Do not neglect physical exercise for the body, as do many people who diligently study the entire day and night without any gymnastics or physical exertion. Rather, it is proper that the body and all limbs move moderately and that each limb perform its activity so that all organs, both external and internal, receive benefit therefrom. How does he define exercise? This is very interesting. First of all, which exercise do you think he recommends? Walking, stretching, swimming, that's certainly the most beneficial of all types of exercise is a physical exercise to the point that the soul becomes influenced and rejoices, such as ball playing. Yes. He's not saying you have to play ball. He's saying the following. When you play a sport, you're exercising and your mind is enjoyably experiencing. What is happening is that simultaneous to the physical exercise, your body also benefits from the happiness that you experience, which is also therapeutic in maintaining health. Example in question. I'm trying to find the exact quote because it's... Here it is. How do you know that exercise has gone beyond? Says Maimonides, the activity of exercise, when it becomes strenuous movement and alters your inner being, this is when it's become too much. This means that if a person performs any activity which forces him to breathe deeply and more rapidly and successfully than before, that is correct exercise. But where your facial expressions, I'm trying to look for the exact quotes on this. Oh, here we are. Continue on that exercise where your body temperature changes and your breathing changes, that's exercise. But continue as long as your facial appearance remains normal. Now, have you ever seen someone who's on the exercise machine? Next time you're on a treadmill, put it in front of the mirror. Because as soon as you see your face straining, your body is telling you, too much. It's gone too far. If your face is saying, I'm in pain, I can't wait, I've done the 3 miles. It's gone too far. Maimonides is saying that when there's a change in temperature and change in breathing, that's when you know you're really exercising. Maintain that so long as you notice that your face is not strained from what you're going through. Those of you who jog 6 miles every morning, I don't know what to say anymore. Okay. Last couple of quotes and I'll be open up to questions. If the patient, and I'm taking this from Hanhagas Abrius, the Directives for Health, chapter 2, paragraph 21 and 22. If the patient can be treated through diet alone, he should not be treated with medicines. It is impossible to control the illness without if it is impossible to control the illness without medications, the first choice should be medicines that are nourishing and foods that have medicinal properties. When using medicines, one should begin with mild ones. If these are sufficient, well and good. Only if they are insufficient should one use stronger medicines. Wherever possible, simple drugs can be used. Wherever possible, simple drugs should be used. And if the illness cannot be controlled without a compound, one should use the least number of ingredients. Medicines consisting of many ingredients should only be used when absolutely necessary. Chapter 2, paragraph 20. One should never forget to strengthen the patient's physical vitality with nourishing food and to strengthen his spiritual powers with fragrant odors, with music, by telling him happy stories that expand the heart, and by distracting his mind with things that make him and his friends laugh. The people chosen to take care of him should be those who know how to cheer him up. Very important in the laws of visiting the sick. For those of you familiar with Norman Cousins, who laughed himself back to wellness, literally signed himself out of hospital and booked himself into a hotel room. It was much cheaper than $1,000 a night. And he bought for himself videos after videos of Laurel and Hardy and the slapstick comedies and just laughed for hours and hours and hours. Absolutely serious. And he did research on this. Last quote, and open up for questions. Taken from chapter 4, paragraph 7 to 8. Sometimes doctors make a serious mistake, but the patient survives. Other times they make what they think to be a minor mistake, and the patient also thinks it to be of little consequence, but it becomes the cause of the patient's death. Every thinking person should bear this in mind. Any intelligent person can study medical literature and understand when or when not to use various treatments. What is difficult, even for a skilled physician, is to apply this knowledge in individual cases. For those who know nothing about the fundamentals of healing and treat it casually and talk a lot, nothing seems difficult. They don't think there is any illness that requires careful deliberation. The common run of people think medicine can be learned quite easily, whereas it is really extremely difficult to master, even for a conscientious physician. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard the Directives of Health. Enjoy the rest of the seminar in health. A couple of moments for questions. Oh, very good. We have tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., an exercise class here in the hotel. It's on the program given by Chaya Nechama. So look forward to that for the ladies. Yes?
Excellent lecture. A quick question. You went over the point about sleep. And yes. One of the most important and most often not talked about.
Right.
Important things we need to do for our health. Could you go over that very briefly?
Yeah, question. What does Maimonides say about sleeping habits? So in directive number 4, he says the following. Hayoyim v'halayla chaftal chaos. The day and night combines 24 hours. That didn't take too much math to figure out. Dai loy la'adam nishon shloshon. It's enough that a person sleeps 1/3 of that. Shushmoyna chaos. That's 8 hours. V'yu ha'pesoif halayla. It should be at the end of the night. Kadei shetia mitchila shenatoi ad shetale ha'shemesh shmoyna chaos. In other words, a person should go A person should go to sleep at the early part of the night and wake up early in the morning prior to sunrise. This way he wakes before sunrise. The statement he's making simply is go along with 8 hours sleep. Now it's interesting, in a different part of Maimonides' work, which is the same work but not on health, he talks about if you're diligent in your studies and your passion is such that you never want to miss a night of learning, and you want to delve into the depths of study and even the mysteries of the Torah, so you should never miss a night of learning Torah. Does it mean the whole night? 6 hours, 8 hours? This is a general recommendation, the 8 hours sleep. Not everyone needs eight, some need a little bit less. Maybe some need a little bit more. But in general, this is sufficient for everyone. He talks also about which side of the body you should sleep on, preferably the left side. It aids in the digestion. There are other reasons for that as well. Yeah.
I wonder how does all this reconcile itself with things like taking vitamin C and E and the one a day, and
right?
How does that is that something that
he would? Yeah. Question. What do you do? I mean, this is going to be the last question.
You can continue the questions and answer these refreshments right now. That people should feel free.
Okay. Fine. Alright, we're going to take a few more questions, but you should know that there are refreshments outside, healthy refreshments, that totally changed the whole menu now. There's healthy refreshments outside, so feel free to get up during the questions and refresh yourselves. The question is the following. What would Maimonides' comment be on taking vitamins?
Supplemental.
Basically, if I've understood Maimonides correctly, I'm not sure if I can pinpoint the exact quote. He makes the following statement: that if your body has got used to a regimen where you are functioning very well, and now you want to take something new, watch the way your body works. If you adjust well and you see an improvement, fine. If you don't see an improvement, leave the body alone. So if your experience is that you can measurably say that there's a difference, there's a measurable difference between before taking vitamins and after taking vitamins, then my guess is that Maimonides would shake your hand and say, continue. If you really can't see a difference, leave the body alone. The body will do fine without. If you're not seeing a difference, maybe try something else. Yeah.
Why does he specify the left side?
Okay. Why does he specify the left side? There are several reasons. The most obvious reason is that in the digestion, because of the way the stomach is laid out, gravity is more on your side when you're sleeping on the left. That's why even in the times of the Greeks and the Romans, and even in Jewish law, if you eat leaning, you should only do so on the left side. And the reason why is because of the esophagus and the trachea, the way it's situated is that your food pipe is on the left side. If you lean on your right side when you eat, there's an increased danger, likelihood, that food might accidentally go down your air pipe and, God forbid, cause choking. Yes?
What does he have to say about adequate hydration? Drinking of water, and does he specify the amount? Does he make any comments?
Yeah, what's the comment of Maimonides with regard to drinking water? He does mention, which we quoted, you can drink to your heart's content after the meal, but during the meal you should keep it to an absolute minimum. There is a place, I'm trying to remember where I saw it, and which quote, where he talks about, I know where it is, 1 second. In breakfast? I think you're right, Rabbi Sushad would know. Okay, here we are. Ukshiat chalam mazon lit akel b'me'av. When food starts to digest in your stomach, shoyte mashi hu tzarech lishtois. Then drink what you feel you need to drink. V'lo yarve lishtois mayim v'afilu kshiat akel hamazon. But don't drink too much water, even after your food has digested. That was the statement that he makes there. Is that the one you're referring to? Shall I give you the Rambam? The beginning of the meal. That was where he stated that. I don't see that right here. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
What about the behavior
modificator type of medication.
Behavior modification.
Right. Like, you know, you have hyperactivity in children, you have depressive state.
Right. Right, that's actually in the same section called Hilchos Deos, where he discusses moods, mood changes. He discusses the possibility that a person has either been raised in a certain way to respond to circumstances, or it's part of the physiology, part of his biology and the genes, or as he grows older and notices and becomes aware that he's made choices that are not supporting him, he should go to the other extreme until he gets to the middle of where he needs to be in any particular character trait or modality of behavior. And it's called the golden mean rule, that to go in the middle path. He states that on all character traits, with the exception of two, which is arrogance and anger. He makes the claim that anger is a choice. It's never correct to blame it on someone else, and the anger essentially is something one has to conquer over a lifetime, because it creates only damage and negativity in every single way it's manifest. The only time he says you're allowed to be angry is if you don't feel anger. That's called kas b'chutz. That's anger only on the outside. Yes, sir.
I believe the reason you quoted modern people was to support. Manji said so many centuries ago.
Right.
But all those people you quoted, were they all their statements backed by scientific testing?
Well, the ones I'm quoting are themselves either scientists or doctors.
But they may be doctors,
right.
But that doesn't mean because the doctor said it,
right.
that means there's scientific proof that says it's true.
Right.
I mean, Maimonides talked about bloodletting, and I think that's been found to not be something we should be doing.
Right.
Went over that. You skipped right. His comment on it. So
he himself does not recommend bloodletting. He explains should try and avoid it. So you know there are different theories whether it's really healthy or not.
But how many of the people you quoted actually had scientific research to back up what they were saying?
Right. The answer to your question is they all did. But the problem is the following. This is why I didn't really want to get involved, because it gets very controversial. And that is the following. When discussing the statements of someone like John Tilden or Sir Isaac Jennings, who was the first one to work with placebos and identify that in at least 50% of the cases of using conventional medicine and 50% of the cases using placebos. Placebos means there's nothing in there, but people think they're taking medication. The results are the same. Now, the problem is the following. If you're going to start getting into the scientific results of this, it becomes very controversial, because it's basically you're saying that the medical profession has to re-examine itself, which I don't feel comfortable in this platform doing. But what comes out is really the following, and this I personally see as consistent with Maimonides' position, is that medicine has to be applied with the knowledge of the patient in the fullest possible way, meaning to say to understand all aspects of the patient's history, not just from the chart, but from the lifestyle. For example, if a person comes in with a heartache, would it be fair to only look at their heart history and isolate it from the possibility that they're going through a divorce and foreclosure and the children are having custody problems, whatever? And this is not the doctor's problem, and this is not the doctor's forte necessarily. But what I'm bringing out is that in the different areas that one needs to look at, nutrition, diet, exercise, rest, stress release, these are areas where a doctor doesn't necessarily have training to treat the patient. Because most of the training is basically in pathology, in the study of disease, not in the study of health, so to speak. And when you look at the correlation between diet, exercise, and illness, it's the mounting evidence in medical science can no longer be ignored. Meaning to say that we see again and again that the worst diseases, the two biggest killers in America, cancer and heart disease, are closely related to lifestyle. That refers specifically to diet. But when you look at the training that the doctors in America receive, you will discover that less than 25% of medical schools have more than one course on nutrition. So how well prepared are they? I didn't want to make this quote, but you're bringing me into it, so, and it's the end of the presentation, and most people aren't in the room. But I will show you the following. The U.S. market for prescription drugs is the largest in the world, and it's valued about $35 billion annually. The drug stores dispense with over $2 billion prescriptions a year. Do you know how many pills an American is taking every day? Have you any idea? It's 25 million pills an hour. Now listen to this. And this is taken from Dr. Jerry Avorn, an associate professor at Harvard Medical School who has studied the influence of pharmaceutical marketing. And this is the statement that he's made. There are over 8,000 prescription drugs on the market, and for the majority of doctors, 70% of all prescription drugs were not around when they went to medical school. According to numerous studies by medical policy researchers, the influence of drug companies on doctors is greater than that of professional societies, scientific journals, and medical school education. The education of American physicians about drugs has been relegated to drug companies by default, charged by Dr. Jerry Avorn, an associate professor of Harvard Medical School, who has studied the influence of pharmaceutical marketing. As a result, he continues, pharmacological solutions are thought of first, rather than non-pharmacological approaches that could be just as effective and safer. And included in that category would be letting the body give its own chance if it's a very minor ailment, and if not, then understanding the full gamut of where the person's coming from before prescribing a specific drug. Now, I will say the following. Being English, I still remember, and again, this isn't what I'm afraid of giving the impression is I'm evaluating doctors. That's not what I'm looking to do. I'm trying to state an observation. I remember coming from England that the family doctor was someone who you called with an ailment and he came to your house. When we went to the doctor, there was a discussion about what's going on in the family, the children, this and that. I remember this even as a child and a teenager. Coming to America, I was shocked. My first, now I'm used to it, but I was initially shocked, you know, especially paying $8,000 a year in insurance, medical insurance, before I even know if I need to suffer from any ailment. It's going to end off right now. And I just point out, in less than 30 seconds, is that I'm shocked how fast Americans are used to immediately turning to medication for an answer to a problem. And what's happened is that the doctors feel pressured by the consumer media and therefore the consumer to give a quick, immediate fix to pain rather than search out the disciplines that are required in the directives that we quoted tonight. Thank you for your patience.